So I hope you can see the picture here, the slide. And you see I have chosen different background. It's red. The other backgrounds were quite pleasing and comforting, but we are dealing here with Revelation 17, and in Revelation 17 you have an animal which is scarlet, and there is a horse sitting on that animal which is also scarlet, so I choose a black background so that we are set in the right mood. Let's read this complex text, and people say this is one of the most difficult parts in Scripture, and indeed it is, and if you read that, your mind is going to spin. And the angel said to me, "Why do you wonder? I tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and is about to come up out of the abyss and goes, this is literally translated, and goes to destruction, and those who dwell on the earth, whose names has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast and that was and is not and will come." Now, this is not the only thing. There's more in the chapter, and actually the heading for this lecture is the beast of Revelation 17, a suggestion. So I'm not just talking about everything in this chapter, but I will be focusing on the beast. Now, there are important questions that come up. For example, is the sea beast of Revelation 13 identical with the beast of Revelation 17, or does the beast of Revelation 17 present a different power? Secondly, what is the time frame of the vision? Does John describe events from a first century perspective, or is the point of reference to be found later, and John is placed there in the Spirit? Another question, are the description of the beast in Revelation 17:8, namely, it was and is not, and is about to come up out of the abyss and goes to destruction, is this description parallel to the description of the heads, which are depicted as five are fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, plus the eighth? Or do these different stages of the beast not directly coincide with the subdivisions of the heads? How should the heads be interpreted? So you see a number of questions. We don't have much time, so I will skip that and don't go through these different interpretations of preterists. Let me just mention, preterists normally see Rome here represented in the beast as well as in the harlot, and futurists see that to some extent too, but then all the events are later after this big gap that they have. We are dealing here predominantly with historicists, because we ourselves consider us historicists, and within our tradition you have a number of interpretations which I briefly will mention. For example, this one, the was face of the beast represents pagan Rome, the is not face, the interim between pagan and papal Rome, and the will come face is papal Rome. Then here's another interpretation. The was period stands for papal Rome, and the will come phase for its revival after the healing of the deadly wound. You see here in this case, Revelation 13 and 17 is taken together. Number three, the beast does not represent the papacy, but Satan. So we are talking about Satan when we talk about the beast in Revelation 13. What about the heads? They stand either for all political opposition to the people and the cause of God. So that's a more universal description, and details are not mentioned here. And a second interpretation, the five heads are the beasts of Daniel 7. So starting with Babylon, plus the little horn, that is the empire from Babylon to the papacy. The sixth head is the beast out of the abyss in Revelation 7, in Revelation 11, or the beast out of the earth, Revelation 13, and then the seventh head is a world organization or restored papacy. And another few, the five heads, the five that are fallen, are the world empires, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. The sixth hat is pagan Rome, and the seventh is papal Rome or the beast out of the earth, either or, not both. What is the context of this vision? Very briefly, Revelation 15 and 16 contain the seven last plagues. The sixth plague describes the drying up of the Euphrates River, the river of Babylon, and Armageddon, whereas the seventh plague depicts the judgment on Babylon. And from Revelation 17 onward, this judgment is described in more details. And if you look closely there in chapter 17, right in the beginning, one of these bowl angels talks to John, and you have a close connection of the bowls or plagues with what is found there in chapter 17 and 18. Here's an outline of the chapter, and I hope you can see that. We have always a little narrative, so it starts with a narrative, John and one of these bowl angels, and then we have an angelic speech, and this speech talks about the judgment on the harlot. After that, there's a short snippet again of narrative. John is taken into the desert. And then you see two visions. Both are introduced with, "and I saw." Therefore, I have subdivided that in two visions. The first one is dealing with the harlot and the beast with seven heads and ten horns. And she is the mother of all the harlots called Babylon the Great. Second vision, verse 6, first part, the harlot and the saints. Talks about the harlots and the saints. And after that, there is again a very short passage which contains narrative, and it says, John was wondering what was going on, and when he saw all of that. And then you have two more angelic speeches. In the first angelic speech, we hear about the beast, the heads, the horns, and the future battle against the lamb, the faithful. The second angelic speech here, which is actually the third, talks about the waters, the horns, and the beast's battle against the harlot. And the harlot is here, the great city. And in chapter 18, Babylon will be portrayed as a city, as you know, whereas in chapter 17, it's a harlot. So this end of the chapter introduces already chapter 18. Let's look at that briefly in apocalyptic literature. So we will make some observations briefly about the outline of chapter 17. In apocalyptic literature, the distinction between vision and angelic speeches is important, and Gerhard Fundel has pointed that out for the book of Daniel too. In a vision, a prophet may move freely in time and location. The interpretation of the vision, however, has to relate to the prophet's time and place in order to make sense. Otherwise, there is no way of how to interpret that. Now, in this first speech, the angel promises John that the judgment on the harlot will be shown to him. That's right in the beginning there of chapter 17. However, the next two short visions that he sees do not spell out this judgment on the harlot, but they furnish additional information on the harlot and her activities, and then mention the beast. And the two following angelic speeches do not only explain most powers mentioned before, with the exception of the beast, but also elaborate on the judgment referred to in the first angelic speech. The first vision stresses the harlot as Babylon the Great, whereas the last speech, we mentioned that already, talks about her as the city. We will go on. With regard to final activities, we find a stronger emphasis on the horns. So we'll mention that again. Look through the chapter. At the end of the chapter, the heads are not mentioned again. You have just the beast and you have the horns. The beasts are not directly mentioned for being involved in this final battle. Now, this is here again an outline of the two angelic speeches. And you see some more details with these two angelic speeches. So in verses 7 through 14 and 15 and 18, you have an introduction, and it talks about the beast first, and then you have this formula, which you have seen. Then it goes on to the heads. The formula which you have seen is missing, but it says, the heads, there are seven mountains and are seven kings. You move on, you have the horns, and again the formula, which you have seen, and then you have again an identification. The horns are seven kings. You go on to the third angelic speech, there are the waters. Again the formula, which you have seen, and the explanation, they are people, and so on. After that, the ten horns and the beast, which you have seen, they are not, again, stressed here any longer, but the horns have been explained anyway, and you notice here already that the beast is not explained. The harlot, which you have seen, and again, an explanation, the harlot is the great city. So, let's summarize that briefly. The harlot, the waters, the heads, and the horns are identified. So another symbol is given, or whatever, they are identified. In each case, the same phrase is used. The only entity which is not directly identified is the beast itself. So in the beast, we miss this phrase, the beast is this and that, okay? This is missing. Whereas all the other entities have that. Although we hear about its activities, the beast is not further explained. This fact may be important for the understanding of the beast. Whereas the judgment of the harlot is described in great detail in chapter 17 through 19, the judgment of the beast is not found in Revelation 17. Let's look at one of the many problems. One of the problems that expositors of Revelation encounter is that the harlot and the beast seem to point to the same historical identity. Now, no matter what you do, if you take a preterist approach or if you take a historicist approach, you end up with the same problem. Namely, let's go with preterists. Preterists would say Babylon, the harlot Babylon, reminds us of Rome, and she's sitting on seven hills, and this is Rome. But on the other hand, you have the harlot, yeah, and the beast with the seven heads represents these seven mountains, and these seven mountains point to Rome. In other words, the harlot as well as the beast are somehow identified with Rome. Now, if you take a historicist approach, and we would say, let's go with papal Rome, and say the harlot, to some extent, includes papal Rome, then you look at the beast, and you have seen these different views that I have presented before. You say the beast is also papal Rome, but that creates a problem to some extent, at least. And if you go through the heads, then some of the heads, we have seven heads, and then we say one of the heads is also papal Rome, or maybe two even, or three. So you have papal Rome in the heads, in the harlot, and in the beast. You see the problem? Because at the end of chapter 17, this very same beast and its horn kill the prostitute. And so you have the paradoxical situation that Rome seems to bring about the downfall of Rome. So Rome kills herself. And the question is that very likely or not? We move on and look a little closer now to the beast out of the abyss. First of all, we notice that this is a parody of God, because this description of the beast in Revelation 17:8 as was and is not and will come reminds us of God the Father, because God the Father is called He who was and who is to come. Now, in the book of Revelation, you have various titles and description of God and Jesus, and some of them overlap. Some of them are used for both. For example, Alpha and Omega is used for both, Father and Son. But there are some titles which are used for God the Father only. And this is one of the titles. The title He Who Was and Who Is and Is to Come, and this comes in various variations, is a title for God the Father. So this description of the beast, it was and is not and will come, reminds to some extent of God the Father. And so we see it is a parody of God. Yeah, here in the next paragraph you find actually what I just have said. So Revelation 17, the beast imitates God the Father, whereas the sea beast of Revelation 13 is an imitation of Jesus Christ. Now, I cannot elaborate that much, but you have the same language there for the sea beast as an imitation of Jesus Christ, because the beast was slaughtered. The same word is used for Jesus as for the sea beast, and it was raised, and both have authority and so on. If you look at the language, this is recognized with those who study the book of Revelation, that the sea beast in Revelation 13 is an imitation of Jesus. Here you have an imitation of God the Father. Now let's look at some elements which are common between the sea beast and the scarlet beast. Now both of them have 7 heads and 10 horns. In both cases, blasphemies are mentioned. In both cases, you find opposition to God or to Jesus and the followers of Christ. Both are called beasts, and there you have people that are wondering what is going on. So in any case, this has to be accepted. Between sea beast and scarlet beast, there are some common elements. What are the differences between the two beasts? The sea beast has crowns on its horns, but the beast of Revelation 17 has no crowns. Then the color of the sea beast is not mentioned, but the other beast's color is mentioned. It's scarlet. This is our background, okay? Slides. The sea beast comes out of the sea, but the scarlet beast comes out of the abyss. Now, time elements are also mentioned with both beasts, but they vary and are quite different. The sea beast is dependent on the dragon, but no such thing is said about the scarlet beast. The sea beast, as we just have said, is an imitation of Christ, while the scarlet beast is a parody of God the Father. So what you find is you have similarities, but you have also differences. Now next we have to compare the dragon and the scarlet beast and see what the similarities and differences are. Now in this case again you have 7 heads and 10 horns. There is a similar color, and one scholar has said this is actually the same color, it's just different it's just a different shade of color, but basically it's the same color. There's opposition specifically to Jesus, and in both cases you have contact to a woman. So these are the common elements. What are the differences? Well, the scarlet beast comes out of the abyss, the dragon is cast out of heaven. However, coming out of the abyss is a later phase of the beast's career. The dragon has 7 crowns on his head, the scarlet beast has no crowns. The dragon is also called serpent, but not beast, as the scarlet beast is. Okay, so you find similarities and differences with both. Still, we have to proceed a little more and have to ask, who is this beast? What we do next is we take a look at the word abyss in the book of Revelation. And this word abyss is mentioned 7 times. And I just will give you a list, and then we will spend a moment to go through that. In Revelation 19, 9 verse 1, there is a star fallen from heaven, and this star has the key of the abyss, and when he opens that, locusts come out and torture human beings. In Revelation 9 verse 2, this is the same situation, the star opened now the pit of the abyss. Revelation 9:11, the king of the locusts is the angel of the abyss called Apollyon. This is the same context. This is all the fifth trumpet. And in Revelation 11:7, the beast which comes out of the abyss kills the two witnesses. This was number 4. We have 3 more to go. In chapter 17:8, which is our text, the beast on which the great prostitute sits comes out of the abyss. In Revelation 20 verse 1, an angel comes from heaven with the key to the abyss, and this angel binds Satan in the abyss for 1,000 years, Revelation 20, verse 3. Now, what about the abyss? The Hebrew word tehom, rendered as deep or as waters or the deep of the flood, is almost regularly translated with this Greek term abyssos. The term is found 36 times in the canonical books of the Septuagint, for the first time, the deep or the abyss, the Tehom, occurs in Genesis 1 verse 2, where it describes the situation when the sea was not yet separated from the dry land. Now, after the separation, you have the sea and you have the earth, and they become visible. And it is precisely from these two areas that have become visible that the two beasts of Revelation 13 come forward and arise. The sea beast comes out of the sea, and the other beast comes out of the earth. In the Septuagint, the abyss is associated with water, with the flood, or the sea, in the vast majority of the cases, and occurs in the singular as well as in the plural. However, there are also texts in the Septuagint in which the abyss may be contrasted with the sea, or is described as the depth of the earth, from which the psalmist hopes to be brought up again. And in Psalm 148, verse 7, the dragons and all abyssoi are associated. Now we have to move to the New Testament and ask ourselves, how is this term used in the New Testament? It's found 7 times in Revelation, 9 times in total in the New Testament. So we have 2 more places. One is in Luke and the other one is in Romans. In Romans 10:7, the abyss is a symbol of the realm of death. And according to Luke 8, verse 31, demons asked Jesus not to be sent to the abyss. Thus, here the abyss is linked to satanic agency and is the place where demons may dwell. And therefore, Westermann notes correctly, saying, early Judaism and the New Testament shift the meaning of Tehom and Abyssos to the depth of the earth as the prison of spirit and as the world of the dead. The sea is not specifically linked to the abyss in the New Testament, which is also true for the book of Revelation. And therefore, my suggestion is to keep sea and abyss separate in the book of Revelation. Now, let's briefly look at these texts in the book of Revelation. There is not too much time. I will try to be as short as possible. The first text was Revelation 9, verse 2 and 1. The fallen star has been interpreted by some as a positive power, by others as a negative power. We cannot go into that. But when we talk about a fallen star, a number of Old Testament and New Testament texts come into our mind. For example, in Job 38:7, in the Masoretic text, the sons of God are called morning stars. Now, the Septuagint changes that, and instead of talking about sons of God, it talks about angels. Okay? So, the Septuagint, the fallen, the star here, the son of God, the morning star, son of God, according to the Masoretic text, and the Septuagint are angels. Job 1 verse 6 describes how Satan among these sons of God, Masoretic text, or angels, Septuagint, approached God. A falling morning star is found in Isaiah 14, verse 12, and we know that very well, this passage. The Babylonian king is addressed with language that sets him apart from ordinary mortals, but according to Watts, the poem is a simile to picture the fall and disgrace of the tyrant and is not specifically tailored for the king of Babylon. And the New Testament uses this text and its concepts to point to Satan, as do the church fathers. And there are a number of New Testament texts which we could mention. In 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14, we hear that Satan disguises himself as the angel of light. According to Luke 10, verse 18, Jesus saw Satan fallen from heaven, and he may have deliberately alluded to Isaiah 14, verse 12. And there are a number of other texts. We also find that in extra canonical literature that stars are angels, and then you have this concept of being fallen. Now, if you look at the word to fall in the book of Revelation, let me mention that briefly. The verb occurs 23 times in Revelation. 9 times it refers to falling down to worship God or mistakenly worship an angel, and it has positive connotations when the worship is directed toward God. In addition to worship, the term to fall is associated with the fall of stars, mountains, sun and heat, cities, Babylon, and the five heads of the beast which we are looking at. In Revelation 2 verse 5, Jesus criticizes the church in Ephesus for having fallen away from first love. So obviously, if we look at that term in the book of Revelation, the term has negative connotation, this term to fall, and is found in judgment context when the issue is not worship. And consequently, having fallen in Revelation 9 verse 11 should also be understood in a judgment setting. Concerning the suggestion to identify the star of Revelation 9 verse 1 with the angel of Revelation 20, which some people have done, some say Revelation 9 verse 1, this angel which has the key to the abyss, is the same angel that you find in chapter 20, where the angel comes and locks Satan in the abyss. Farmer has here perceptively observed discontinuity instead of continuity, saying the remarkable contrast between this star's action and that of the angel in Revelation 21 through 3 has to be noticed. He held the key to the abyss. The angel, he goes on, the angel locked the deceptive dragon in the abyss. The fallen star, however, unlocked the abyss, unleashing the demonic horde. So in Revelation 9 verse 1, we hear about one fallen star only, according to chapter 8 verse 20, a great star whose actions have extremely negative effects. It seems best to understand this star as Satan, who, according to Revelation 12, verse 7 through 9, was cast out of heaven. Now then you find that next one here in chapter 9, verse 11, it's the same context. Now you can dispute if that is the same situation or not. I would assume it is. Expositors agree, more or less, that this king of the locusts and angel of the abyss should be understood as Satan, and you have also the word Abaddon and Apollyon. The word Abaddon is used a number of times in the Old Testament. Hebrews 2 verse 14 reminds us that it is the devil who has the power of death. And by the way, this word Abaddon in the Old Testament is also used in context of Sheol and the grave, and the New Testament then Hades. Ephesians reminds us, Paul reminds us, that there's a struggle against the rulers and powers, against the forces of this darkness, and so on. The word Apollyon is derived from apoleia, destruction, and the destruction that Satan brings along or intends to afflict is described very clearly in Revelation 12, where Satan's fall also is depicted. So, some expositors would say chapter 9 verse 1 and 2 and chapter 9, 11 should be kept separately. I wouldn't do that, but in any case, whatever you do, it is clear that the abyss is linked somehow to Satan. Go one further, chapter 11 verse 7, the beast which comes out of the abyss and by means of the French Revolution temporarily kills God's two witnesses, the scriptures of the Old and New Testament, seems to be Satan again. This is a deceptive power here in Revelation 11 verse 7. And you see the beast out of the earth, the beast which is found in chapter 13, begins as a deceptive activity around of the time when the sea beast has his deadly wound. Whereas here in this situation, only after the deadly wound, this situation happens, namely the destruction of the beast. There are some other, in chapter 20, let's go on here briefly, you have more or less a great reversal. So what I would say, let me summarize that here. I have the impression that in chapter 9 and chapter 11, when we talk about the abyss, we have the context of demonic elements and the context of Satan. In Revelation 20 verse 1 and 3, it's very clear that we are talking about Satan, but a reversal is taking place. Satan's power to open the abyss is taken from him, and Satan himself is bound by an angel and confined to the abyss for 1,000 years. So it seems that Revelation 17:8 points to this very situation, and that we find in Revelation 20, and explains the cryptic saying about the beast of Revelation 17. So apparently all references to the abyss in Revelation have to do with Satan, the beast which was and is not and will come out of the abyss and goes to destruction, and on which Babylon sits, a Satan who works through political powers. Let's briefly go to the next slide. We have different phases here, and you can see three times we find that these different phases. The second phase has the last element missing, and this is obvious because it says the people of the inhabitants of the world are wondering what's going on. They are not aware yet of that this beast goes to destruction, so they are wondering. How should we understand these different phases? At what time do they take place? Does the is not phase describe the time of John, the first century, our present situation, or the future? These are different questions, and I have to hurry and go over that briefly. So the it was phase should refer to historic time, while from the is not phase onward, eschatology is in view. Some reasons. First, the is not phase can be understood as a future development because in Revelation the present tense oftentimes stands for the future. And you have that actually a little later when it says it goes in destruction, using the present tense instead of the future tense. Revelation 7 is a description of the future judgment on the harlot. And Dr. Strand argues to seek fulfillment in history, for example, for the is not phase, when that phase is obviously a view of judgment, is illogical. Keep in mind the entire context. Context of Revelation 17 is judgment. Number three, it's not possible that the harlot sits on a beast that is not. Remember, the beast was, is not, is to come out of the abyss and goes to destruction. How can the harlot sit on a beast presently when the beast is not? Neither is it possible that heads and horns exist when the beast does not exist. So look at the faces, next slide please, of the beast. So the beast was not. We said this is the historical time, and this would refer to Revelation 12, for example. The devil exists and worked. It is not. This would refer to the time after the second coming. He is imprisoned in the abyss. No deception is possible. Then it is about to come out of the abyss, would be after the millennium. He is released, gathers the resurrected opponents of God and attacks the holy city and goes into destruction. This is after the millennium when Satan is thrown into the lake of fire and will perish. So what I'm claiming here is that you have in Revelation 17, first of all, Satan in view as the beast, and you have not his fate finally described, you have just a hint, but the full description is found in chapter 20. There are some more characteristics of the beast which also point in the direction of Satan, but we will not deal with that. Let's go briefly to the seven heads. In scripture, symbolic mountains stand for empires. I've given some reasons here. So we would say these kings are empires. We have to go back to Daniel and see that. Now some people say the beast and the heads have to be parallel. I don't know if you can see that. I'm sorry, it's not very easy to read. So they say the beast it was coincides with five are fallen of the heads. Then the beast it is not would coincide with one of the heads is. Will come out of the abyss is the other that has not yet come and goes into destruction is the eighth. I do not think that this works well, because you have really a problem here. Whereas one of the heads is, the beast is not, if you take that parallel. You see? And there are some other problems with that. Strand correctly states that though John sees the vision from the is not phase, namely the judgment phase, the heads and horns are historical identities belonging to the was phase. When is the time of the one is? We are dealing with the heads now. one is. A natural understanding of Revelation 17 verse 10 seems to imply that at the time of when John wrote the book of Revelation, the sixth kingdom was ruling. Now, Revelation is addressed to Christians in the first century, and probably they would have understood it this way. When they were living, that was the time and the sixth head was ruling. If we assume that the sixth head was not ruling when Revelation was penned and John had been taken to another time, then we are not able to come up with a definite interpretation of Revelation 17. It's that just conjecture. So if we then go from there, it would mean that at the time of John, five heads were fallen and one existed. The existing one was without doubt the Roman Empire. So the five preceding kingdoms would then begin with Egypt, continue with Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. Now this can be deduced logically once we have found the kingdom of the time of John. But we have also clues within the book of Revelation, because the first power mentioned in the book of Revelation is Egypt. Revelation 11 verse 6. In Egypt, although that is a symbolic Egypt, the Lord was crucified. And remember, those who have taken classes with Dr. Strand, maybe he talks about the exodus of Egypt motive in the book of Revelation, and I don't have time to go into that. So if that's true, we start with Egypt and go on, and at the time of John are there with pagan Rome, then the sixth head would be the Roman Empire, and the seventh, the papacy. Now there is an Adventist expositor, Dr. Reynolds, and he says the seventh head would be the beast of Revelation, the beast coming out of the earth. That is another option, which I personally don't think is so likely. There is one problem which I want to allude briefly to. It says this seventh beast is there and it remains a little while. How can that apply to the papacy? This word, a little while, is found four times in Revelation. In Revelation 2:14 and in 3:4, it describes the quantity of things and persons, whereas in Revelation 12 and 17, it refers to time. The short time which, according to Revelation 12, verse 12, Satan has after Christ's crucifixion consists in the meantime of about 2 millennia. Okay, did you get this? He has little time, comes down on the earth, but this is almost 2 millennia. No. So therefore, we can say a little while in Revelation takes on a meaning of its own. For instance, cast out of heaven, Satan knows that his time is short. The short time ought not to be taken literally but symbolically, much the same as the reference to 1260 days, 42 months, and 3.5 years, and they have to be understood figuratively. So in other words, there is no problem to identify that beast here with papal Rome, although it was ruling that long. We have not been able to talk about the horns, and I have to conclude that, because Larry is sitting here and forcing me to discontinue. I have written 45 pages here, and I'm just desperately trying to summarize what we have said. Now let me just say and stop here at this very point. At the very end, if you look at all of that, it seems to be a cruel picture that is portrayed there in Revelation. But if you read there, it's talking also about Jesus, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And it talks about those who are with him. And this is a message not just of blood and whatever, it's a message of comfort. There will be a battle, there will be Armageddon, there will be a battle against Jesus the King, there will be a second battle against the harlot, evil destroys itself. And that's all true, but there are those who are with the King of Kings, and they are in his hands, and they are comforted and kept. And this is a wonderful message that we have to keep in mind in spite of all the other things.